Good morning. I'm Donna. I'm Special Programs Coordinator at Canopus Center, and we welcome you all here this morning. If you weren't aware, we have a special visiting teacher this weekend, Don Hendrick. He is resident teacher at Tupton Normal Ling in Santa Fe. He has been teaching this weekend on a prayer that we say every Sunday, the Four Immeasurables. There's copies of, if you didn't get a handout when you came in, grab something from the cart there. And he's going to be teaching this morning on the immeasurable wish for joy for others. So I hope you'll enjoy it. Don is really quite wonderful, very gentle, and very articulate. Just a couple of very quick announcements. Next Sunday, Geshe Galik will be back. So we'll have a big celebration, big celebration to welcome him home. On Saturday, for those of you who know Gay Norbu, we don't see him here too much, but he is a monk who came over with the Shiva tour in 2003 and has been living in Raleigh for most of the time since then. He is going back to Tibet to take care of his aging mother, so we'll have a little party for him on Saturday at 4:30, and following that we'll have a Tara practice for him. We encourage you, if you're coming even if you're not coming this afternoon, we encourage you to stay for lunch and discuss what you hear this morning. Don is going to be staying for lunch, so it's a chance to spend a little extra time with him. And what else do we have? Jill needs painting volunteers Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Wednesday and Saturday moving, Thursday and Friday painting. And that's the main things I need to get to this morning. So enjoy the teachings, and that's it. So if you will turn to page 34 in your gold prayer book, or if you have the white folder, it's the first page of text, and we will say our Sunday prayers, beginning with the Shakyamuni Buddha mantra three times. Taya ta om mune mune maha munaye soha. Say the Medicine Buddha stanza, followed by the mantra seven times. Bhagawan with equal compassion for all, whose name when merely heard dispels the suffering of the lower realms, dispeller of disease and the three poisons, I prostrate to Medicine Buddha, lapis light. Taya ta om bekanse bekanse maha bekanse bekanse rata samud gate soha. Taya ta om bekanse bekanse maha bekanse bekanse rata samud gate soha. Taya ta om bekanse bekanse maha bekanse bekanse rata samud gate soha. Teata om bekanse bekanse maha bekanse bekanse rata samud gate soha. Teata om bekanse bekanse maha bekanse bekanse rata samud gate soha. Teata om bekanse bekanse maha bekanse bekanse rata samud gate soha. Tayata om bekanse bekanse maha bekanse bekanse rata samud gate soha. And now we'll say the four measurables in English. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. And if we'll flip to page 37, we'll chant the four measurables in Tibetan. Sam chan tam che de wa dang de we kyu dang chan park your chick. Chen Rezig's mantra 8 times and Green Tar's mantra 7 times. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Tari Tu Tari Tu Re Soha, 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 Om Tari Tu Tari Tu Re Soha. Okay, the children can go to their classes.
Have fun. Okay, good morning, everyone. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm happy to be visiting here. Don Handrick, I live in Santa Fe, and I'm mostly teaching at our center there. And then we have a resident Geshe who comes for 6 months of the year from May through October. So while he's there, then I go out traveling around, and then I go back and he goes out traveling around. So we both get kind of a taste of both worlds. So I'm really happy to be back here at Kadampa with all of you. So we've been working on the four immeasurables this weekend, and I'll talk a little bit more more about them as part of this morning's class, and we also are going to mostly focus on immeasurable joy, this fourth of the immeasurables. But what I'd like to start with is a meditation on immeasurable compassion, because that's what we were working with yesterday afternoon. And it's also a way then to set our motivation for being here. So you might open up your prayer book to, because we are going to recite a verse together, the more extensive verse that is on page 177. So if you have that kind of open and before you, then when we get to that place, it'll be towards the end of the meditation. We'll be reciting the third verse there that has to do with immeasurable compassion. That's in four parts. So I'll just give explanation when we go through that, but I just thought I'd prepare you for that so you don't have all that rustling of opening up prayer books when we get to that part of the meditation. So just find a good meditation posture, because we're going to begin with a few minutes of focusing on the breath. There's always a way to help us to focus our minds. We all have very busy lives and many things that are distracting us, preoccupations we might have. So doing a few minutes of focused meditation on the breath will help us to let some of that go, be a bit more focused and attentive. So if you have a technique that you already use in regard to meditating on the breath, then by all means, you know, you can continue to do that. Just use whatever technique that you prefer. If you don't have a technique that you regularly use, then I'll suggest tuning into the sensation that occurs at the tip of the nose. As you breathe in and out through the nostrils, there's that very subtle sensation that occurs just inside the nose or sometimes on the upper lip. And just pay attention to that. Try to keep your awareness there as you inhale, as you exhale. Just simply allowing the mind to stay present with that as best as you can. But no doubt your mind will wander, as it's prone to do, and you will start thinking about things that are on your mind currently. Worries you might have or plans you're making, or maybe even get distracted by sounds or other sensations in the body. And when that happens, we simply acknowledge those and let them go. Make that choice to continue to be with the breath, to guide your mind back to paying attention to the breath. So I'll ring the chime and we'll do this in silence for a few minutes, and then I'll lead you in this reflection on compassion, developing it into immeasurable compassion. So now that we have the mind a bit more focused, we're going to meditate on compassion because we see that compassion is really central to our motivation, the bodhicitta. It is one of the main components that we need to continually work with to open our hearts with kindness for all beings. But our meditation on compassion starts with self-compassion, starts with directing those thoughts towards ourselves, holding ourselves in the space of compassion. So first of all, kind of go into your own heart and get in touch with this fundamental wish that you possess, that is the same as the wish that all beings have, your own desire to not suffer, to not have dissatisfaction, discontentment. There's nothing wrong with that thought. And you yourself are deserving of that freedom of from suffering. This is what drives us on our own path, is a wish to have our own suffering relieved. At least this is the starting point. So just get in touch with that sincere aspiration that you yourself have to not suffer. And moreover, acknowledge the fact that it doesn't have to be this way. All of what the Buddha taught was to relieve suffering, to end suffering. So you yourself have the potential to achieve that freedom from suffering. So recall that as well, your own wish to be free from suffering, but moreover, that there is the method, the path that leads to that. It can be accomplished. And then within those two thoughts, give yourself the space to fulfill that potential, truly wishing yourself to be free from suffering. And in the space of that wish, begin to cultivate thoughts towards yourself, thinking, may I be free from suffering, all the causes of suffering. May I be free from pain and sorrow. May I be liberated from all the causes of suffering, karma and delusions. May I know true peace. You don't have to use those words necessarily, but spend a minute or so just cultivating thoughts in whatever words work for you. Genuinely wishing for yourself to be free from suffering, to know that freedom. Any time you feel a thought coming up of not being worthy of that, or in some way not feeling justified in having that thought, recall that you are a suffering being just like all beings. And it does start with your own wish to be free from that. As you generate this compassionate thought towards yourself, just take note of any feeling of warmth that might be in your heart area, an awakening of the kind heart. Let that fill your entire being, your entire mind, your body. And then let's extend this out to someone who is very dear to us. Our heart should open quite naturally to them. And this might be a partner, a child, a parent, a friend, a pet, some being who is very close to you, towards whom your heart naturally opens. And visualize that being in the space right in front of you, very close to you. And see the ways that this being is suffering. They might have the more obvious forms of suffering, the suffering of illness, aging, the suffering of not getting what they want, being parted from the things that they do like and enjoy, having various states of mental anguish or stress. But they're also suffering in the subtler ways, in that even the pleasant experiences that this being has aren't lasting, aren't satisfactory, don't really produce any freedom from suffering. And moreover, this being, like all beings in samsara, is under the control of karma and delusions through our own actions that are stimulated by our delusions. Each of us is in this state that we call samsara, and this being in front of you is no different, is under the control of these factors, and therefore in a state of pervasive suffering, conditioned suffering. So in this way, come to acknowledge that this being in front of you, who you're very dear to, you feel very close to them, is suffering, is in that state the Buddha called dukkha, this dissatisfaction, and start to open your heart to them, seeing that just as you want to be free of your suffering, so does this being in front of you. And start to generate that wish for them to be free from suffering, that compassionate thought, by thinking things like, may you be free from suffering. May you be free from all the causes of suffering, karma and delusions. May you know true peace. May you be free from pain and sorrow. Again, whatever thoughts come to mind, just articulate them in your own way and generate that compassionate wish for that being in front of you to be free from all manner of suffering, all the causes of suffering. And as you generate these compassionate thoughts, just attend to any feelings of warmth, closeness that are in your heart right now, that kind heart. Let that expand and grow and fill your entire being. Be filled with compassion for this one being in front of you, this dear friend. then we could work with other individuals, those who are not just our friends, but strangers and even difficult people. But we're going to abbreviate the meditation somewhat and go to trying to hold this thought for all beings in the space of what we call immeasurable compassion. So try to visualize as best as you can just an ocean of beings surrounding you. And you can certainly start by thinking of those beings who you do know that you're very close to, the friends, family members, dear ones. See their individual faces in the space around you. But also bring to mind the difficult people that you have in your life. They too have a more direct relationship with you. They are suffering sentient beings just like your dear friends, as are all the other countless beings that are strangers. This vast ocean of beings going out in all directions. Can't even imagine how many beings there are. Infinite, immeasurable beings. Every single one of these beings is exactly the same as each other as well as you, in their fundamental wish not to suffer and in the reality of their suffering. While their individual situations might look very different, in the most basic way, we are all the same. And while it's hard to take in the suffering of so many beings and to be cognizant of it and to open with compassion for them, we're going to do this in a couple of stages that help us to cultivate this thought even more strongly each time. And the first one will be the first line of that verse that I encouraged you to open up to in the prayer book on page 177. It's the third verse in the four immeasurable thoughts when they're more expanded. And the first one is what we would call an immeasurable aspiration, where we're simply thinking about how amazing it would be if every single one of these beings that we're visualizing, every single being that exists, were to be free of every suffering, all the causes of suffering. So let's recite that together and just try to keep generating that thought of how amazing, how wonderful. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were free of suffering and its causes. You can recall as you do this generation of this thought over and over again, everything we've already meditated on, that every one of these beings wants to not suffer. Every one of these beings has the potential to be free from suffering completely. So this actually can happen. This immeasurable aspiration for all beings to be free from suffering, it can be that wonderful. It can be that amazing. And we're going to strengthen that thought with what we call an immeasurable prayer or wish. And here, it's as if we're the ruler of some domain and we are making that decree, saying, may this happen. No longer just holding the thought of how wonderful it would be if it were to happen. We're going to make it more definite, make this strong prayer, this wish, that this actually come to pass. So let's recite the second line with that thought, and then again you can repeat it in your own mind, just continuing to strengthen that sincere wish that all beings attain that state. May they be free of suffering and its causes. Try to generate this for each of the beings around you as best as you can, not just the friends, not just the strangers, but especially even those difficult people in your life. May they all be free from suffering and its causes. Then in the third step, we make this a measurable resolve, this extraordinary thought that is part of our Mahayana motivation, that we're not content simply to say, may this be so, but we ourselves will carry that burden, will take that responsibility. We recognize that all beings want that, but moreover that they have the capacity to attain that. We therefore must become the agent for helping them to accomplish that. Why? Because every one of these beings has been incredibly kind to us. We have benefited from them, not just in this life, but in countless other lifetimes. So understanding their suffering, feeling a sense of closeness, a sense of responsibility for them, let's recite this third line and again generate that over and over again in your own mind, even if it doesn't feel genuine yet. It's perfectly fine just to continue to work with it at whatever level you can. I myself will cause them to be free of suffering and its causes. And try to hold this resolve, not just for those people who are dear to you, though you might start there. It's a good place to hold that awareness that we want to be the agent to help our dear friends, our own mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, sons, daughters, partners, wives, husbands, whoever, our own pets. But try to expand it beyond that group of friends, to the strangers, and even to the difficult people. What is it like to take that burden, that responsibility, to think, I myself will do this. I will cause them to be free from suffering and its causes. And before we recite the fourth line, let's go ahead and move this thought of bodhicitta, of compassion for all beings at that level of taking responsibility, this immeasurable resolve, into bodhicitta. Make that our motivation for being here today. Because the natural response, once we say something like, I myself will cause them to be free from suffering and its causes, is, how will I do that? How will I possibly become a cause to liberate sentient beings from their suffering? Only by working on myself will I be able to attain that. If I am able to become fully enlightened, to become a Buddha, then I join the ranks of those wholly enlightened beings and can work effortlessly for the welfare of all sentient beings. It's only through my own enlightenment that I will be able to accomplish this. So hold that thought of bodhicitta as your motivation. And then visualize that in the space above you appears four-armed Chenrezig, this white Buddha on a lotus and moon seat. He's sitting in the Vajra position, has four arms. His first two arms, right and left, are holding a wish-fulfilling jewel at his heart. His second left hand is holding an open lotus. And his right hand is holding a crystal rosary. He's adorned with beautiful ornaments, has a shining, smiling face, completely white in color. And he is the embodiment of all of the qualities of the Buddha, particularly compassion. We're going to see this Buddha as the same essence as our own gurus, as all the holy beings, appearing in this form to help us on our path, to recognize that we can rely upon these holy beings to help us to achieve this state. We need not do this entirely alone. They will be there to aid us, to inspire us, to benefit us, to bless us. So as we recite this last line of the immeasurable compassion prayer, think that rays of light and nectar descend down from Guru Chenrezig on the crown of your head, filling you with everything you need to accomplish the path, purifying all the obstacles to doing that. Please, Guru Deity, grant me blessings to be able to do this. And just feel yourself filled with all the blessings of the Buddhas, and feel your heart full of compassion for all sentient beings. Appreciate everyone being patient with a longer meditation, probably longer than what you normally do on Sunday. In this workshop that we've been doing on the Four Immeasurables, I've been trying to incorporate a bit of meditation, because while we recite these and recited them in a shorter form earlier today in the prayers, it's good to have some more thoughts behind them and to meditate on each of them in more detail, and even to the degree that that prayer on page 177 has, where we have kind of four thoughts within each immeasurable thought. So again, compassion is a really important thought, and it's really kind of at the core of our motivation of bodhicitta, because I didn't talk about this so much yesterday, but when we compare it to loving-kindness, which is the second of the immeasurables that we frequently recite in the order that I have them, at least that I've been teaching them, equanimity is first, which is a sense of even-mindedness towards all beings, an equal regard for all beings, and then loving-kindness, which is a wish for them to be happy and to have the causes of happiness for us to be able to accomplish that for them, and then compassion. So love and compassion are just looking at sentient beings through the lens of what is their situation. The situation first, that they lack happiness. They want to be happy. Every one of us wants to be happy, but we lack that. We don't have the causes of that complete. We have fleeting moments of temporal happiness, but we don't have any real lasting peace and satisfaction. Moreover, we look at the other side of it, and we're all suffering as well, and we don't want to suffer. As much as we try to avoid suffering, you can't avoid all suffering. We can avoid some levels of suffering. But this is our fundamental situation. Now, each of these thoughts, although they're focused on the situation of sentient beings, they have a different, I don't know, what emotional registration, if you will. They register at a different level. We kind of can feel a little bit more in my estimation, while our hearts can open up quite nicely with loving kindness, it's an important meditation. Compassion has a different charge to it, right? Because compassion is where we are actually generating that empathy with others, trying to be with them in the midst of their suffering, trying to put ourselves in their shoes and see what it's like to be enduring whatever is going on in the lives of these beings. And of course, we start with ourselves, because we have to have that genuinely for our own selves to begin with. We talked a little bit yesterday about some of the obstacles to that. And I actually did want to share a little bit more that came up in a conversation after the teaching yesterday. You know, we wondered why in our culture there is so much lack of self-compassion. You know, why do we have such a hard time, you know, being compassionate towards ourselves? We actually find it easier to be compassionate towards others, I think, in our culture in general. If we see an animal that's suffering or someone very close to us calls us and needs us, we're kind of right there. But when it comes to our own suffering, we're frequently not that compassionate. We can be quite mean-spirited towards ourselves. And we talked about some factors. Perhaps, you know, we grew up with a concept of original sin and thinking like somehow we're faulty from the very beginning, we're not deserving of compassion. We also talked about how there's a bit of competitiveness and judgmentalness that's in our culture that frequently causes us to be really hard on ourselves. But last night, somebody also mentioned, we're also in a culture where, I think in the West, because we don't see these maybe as much in the East, this kind of lack of self-regard, a low self-esteem. In the West, we have so much advertising, too, and kind of these influences that make us think that we're supposed to be a particular way. You know, if we look the right way and we have the right things and we live the right lifestyle, well, then we've got it made. But if we don't have that, we're somehow inferior. We're somehow not enough. And we very much, you know, Madison Avenue is very much about plugging this whole idea of us not being complete and needing something else in order to have that. And of course we get that, and it doesn't complete us either. There's always something new that we need. There's always something additional that kind of is filling that gaping hole that we have within us that needs to be satisfied, needs to find something to relieve our own sort of aloneness, our suffering, and so on. So this is part of our culture. So we do have to start with ourselves and be very kind to ourselves, become our own best friend. So I really encourage you, those who, you know, want to practice compassion very deeply with others, to really start with yourself. It's hard to start with ourselves, hard to really look at ourselves and generate these thoughts. Does anyone have any reflections on doing that, or anything come up for you while you were generating self-compassion that you'd want to bring up? No? Okay. It's kind of a tough mind for a lot of people. So give yourself some space to work with that. And as I mentioned yesterday, fake it till you make it. You know, continue to do whatever you can to work with these thoughts. Even if it doesn't feel genuine, it will feel more genuine over time. And then we begin to extend compassion for others. Now today we just worked in the meditation with friends, but we also want to understand that, you know, it's not just our friends who are kind of there in our lives, being very directly kind to us in our lives that are suffering. It's all sentient beings who are suffering, including all the strangers, all the people that we don't really know that well. You know, they're living in the same world as us, in the same city as us, in the same neighborhood as us, perhaps. They're occupying this world, but we don't pay that much attention to them. So we have to begin to open our hearts to their reality, to the fact that they're all suffering. We also have to open our hearts eventually to the difficult people in our lives. You know, whether they be individuals who are harming you or those that you love, or political figures that you oppose, or whoever. There are, you know, many people in the world that we could, you know, acknowledge, push our buttons, that trigger us, that make us to feel some anger, some resentment. Those beings are suffering too. Even perhaps suffering more than the beings who are very dear to us, who might have relatively calm or peaceful minds. Those beings who are agitated in that way and harming others are suffering to a greater extent, at least even in the moment. So when we begin to work with this idea of opening up to the kind of the reality of the suffering of others, again, I touched on for ourselves, or for the friend, that there are three levels of suffering, and this is kind of the most basic way that suffering is taught, or dukkha. Sometimes it's better to use that word dukkha, because sometimes we only think of the first level of suffering as being suffering. If I ask most of you in the room, are you suffering today? Unless you've got like a headache or a backache, or maybe you're grieving in some way, you might say, oh no, I'm fine. Well, you're not really fine, okay? Because the first level of suffering, I hate to say it, you know, that book, I'm okay, you're okay, it should have been, I'm not okay and you're not okay. You know? We're all not okay. Okay, so the very first, you know, level of suffering is the tip of the iceberg. And it's sometimes what really helps us to get in touch with compassion, because frequently we aren't moved unless we see some overt pain going on, you know, in others, or we have that in ourselves. But that's only a part of our suffering, a part of our dukkha. The second level is called suffering of change, or the dukkha of change. And this is referring to the fact that even the pleasant experiences that we have in our lives aren't ultimately satisfying. They change. They are unable to continue to give us what they need, and they don't get rid of our suffering completely. You know, no matter how many pleasurable, delightful things you've had in your life, you always need more, right? You need to go back to that delicious food that you had the one time, or the wonderful experience that you had there, relive it even and through pictures and other things. You need to continue to stimulate yourself to have pleasant experiences, because the pleasantness you experience from those things is transitory and fleeting. It simply can't be sustained. Now, there are levels of happiness that can be sustained, levels of well-being. That's what we're aiming for always in our spiritual path, is to find those more lasting things, the happiness of Dharma that will actually allow us to experience much more long-term and lasting contentment and inner peace. But everything that we're kind of, that is in our conditioned world that we experience, not just through our senses, but even some of the thoughts that we have, are unable to sustain that for us, unable to produce that level of happiness and well-being. In that way, they are suffering. In that way, they're dukkha, they're unsatisfactory. So that's the second level. But the third level is what I mentioned in the meditation, is the fact that we are all under the control of karma and delusions. It's like we're in prison. Every one of us is in prison. Not just those people that are in an actual facility behind bars. We're all in the prison of samsara. We are all under the control of these factors. Every single being is, you know, not in control of what happens to them, because they've created karma through the force of their own minds, and the delusions in particular have been responsible for perpetuating this wheel of samsara, going from life to life. Yeah, and it can be pretty kind of unnerving to recognize that for ourselves, and then of course to recognize it for others. But this is what we have to get to, is that deep understanding. This is why this is the first thing that the Buddha taught. The truth of suffering, the truth of dukkha, the first of the Four Noble Truths. And then, of course, he highlighted that the causes are within ourselves. The causes aren't that annoying person out there and the difficulty that we have with, you know, some people in our lives or the illnesses that we experience and so on. The causes are within ourselves, our own deluded, distorted states of mind, and then the karma, the actions that we do on the basis of that. So again, I think most of you in the room are aware of some of these concepts, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time diving into them, but let me know if you do need any additional information on them. There's certainly a lot in many of the texts that we have in our tradition. So that's the second noble truth, is the fact that we have the causes of suffering that can be delineated. The Buddha says, you're not suffering for no reason. You know, it's dependent upon the causes and conditions. And if you get rid of those causes and conditions, you can experience the third noble truth, which is the end of all your suffering, the end of dukkha. That's why this is a very hopeful meditation on compassion. It can be a little depressing sometimes to focus on suffering. But there is a joyful aspect to it, which is the fact that it doesn't have to be this way. The Buddha says we can all be liberated from suffering. We can all attain that cessation of our suffering by removing all the causes of suffering. Because those two are impermanent. They are not in our minds forever. The Buddha, they use this wonderful word, they're adventitious. They're only there because we haven't created the causes to get rid of them. And the causes to get rid of them are the fourth noble truth, the true path that leads to that end of suffering. So, with that understanding, you know, when we begin to look at other beings, we can feel that it's all very hopeful, that our wishes of compassion, you know, that we generate towards others, that sincere wish that they not suffer, that they be free from all the causes of suffering, that this can actually come to pass. That without a doubt, we can, you know, see that as a reality. Of course, how do we get to that place of that being a reality? We have to become more capable ourselves to help others to that degree. And that's why, again, we have that additional thought that goes in there that is about I myself will take that responsibility. And we discussed a bit yesterday, I think it was Jack who brought up the issue of, you know, how can we actually be the cause of any one of these immeasurables, you know, to bring all sentient beings to abide in equanimity, to be happy and have the causes of happiness, to be free from suffering and have freedom from the causes of sufferings, to, you know, abide in a state where they, of liberation and higher rebirth where they never suffer. I mean, how can we bring beings to that state? We have to be more capable ourselves. And we are only going to be kind of a factor that plays a role in that. Sentient beings will still have to attain that themselves. We can't be the sole cause. If the Buddhas could be a sole cause for us to become free from suffering and attain all happiness, they would have done it by now. They would have waved their magic wand and we'd all be happy, all be free from suffering. End of story, you know. So we know that there's work to be done by virtue of making these thoughts, but there's hope within every one of these thoughts of compassion. So as I said, then we extend it to friends, enemies, strangers, and then by virtue of that, when we work with individuals in each of those groups and kind of enlarge our compassion in a very gradual way, then we can hold the thought, may all beings be free from suffering. I will cause all sentient beings to be free from suffering. All these very strong thoughts that are, again, based on the reality of the situation that sentient beings are in, but the hope that they could actually attain something that is completely different. And again, it's not just a hope. It's an actual reality that this can happen for every single one of us, every single being that exists. Not in the state that they're in. Admittedly, you know, mosquitoes that are out in the woods or whatever are not going to be able to attain enlightenment with their little mosquito mind and their mosquito body. It's not going to happen in that lifetime. But we are sitting here with a human life and have that potential to work on ourselves to that degree. And every being we can encourage through our own actions, through our own compassionate response to others, to be able to attain that state as well. So again, this is a hope for all beings to eventually attain that state. So I want to share one little quote from Khunu Lama Rinpoche. Many of you know of Khunu Lama Rinpoche because I think it's a useful way to kind of look at beings, especially when we start having the difficulty of looking at enemies, people that we don't like in this world, or beings that we're really quite, you know, annoyed by. And sometimes the compassionate thought doesn't come so easily. So many of you know of Khunu Lama Rinpoche. He wrote the verses in praise of bodhicitta and was this amazing practitioner who His Holiness the Dalai Lama learned from and received many transmissions from, particularly Shantideva's text, The Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. And he says, it's this simple. Whoever we encounter did either realize reality or did not. So this is, again, how do we actually attain our own freedom from suffering? How do other beings attain it at the deepest level? We have to incorporate the wisdom knowing reality, which we're not going to talk about so much today, but that is, you know, kind of the other side of it, the other wing that takes us to enlightenment. Here today, we're working mostly with compassion and all these kinds of heart qualities, but we have to eventually apply an understanding through wisdom of the nature of reality, how things actually exist. So Khunu Lama Rinpoche says, whoever we encounter either did realize reality or they didn't. Is this, can everyone agree with that fact, right? So every being in the room has either realized reality or didn't. Maybe most of us haven't. I don't know. I don't know all your minds. You could be all Buddhas for all I know. So if they did realize reality, he says, they stand on their own wisdom and are objects of veneration. So this is true, right? You know, if you've got somebody in the room has realized emptiness, has realized the deepest reality. You know, I prostrate at your feet. How amazing, how wonderful. You've developed that wisdom. You are on your way out. You are on your way to Buddhahood. How amazing. And he goes on to say, if they did not, they are immersed in suffering and are objects of compassion. Thus, nobody is a valid object of anger or derogation, and nobody can ever be abandoned from our hearts. You know, so it's a very simple equation. Anyone you meet is either in one category or the other. If they're not a being who's realized reality and has begun to remove their own afflictions, their own delusions, started to taste, you know, what liberation is like, well, then they're a suffering sentient being under the control of these factors and are therefore only an object of our compassion. So it's a kind of a nice thought. I think about this one frequently because I think it's really helpful to kind of be in that space of recognizing that is how most of the beings we encounter are in that category, are really just objects of our compassion. And anger, any of these responses are not valid in the face of that if we hold that view of where those beings are. So maybe that's enough on compassion, but I wanted to talk a little bit more about it. Anyone have any questions or comments on practicing compassion? Yeah, Andre.
Yeah, today you just mentioned the three types of suffering.
Right.
Yeah, and yesterday we were talking. Yesterday we were talking about them a little bit more in depth.
Uh huh.
And so we got to pervasive suffering, the third type of suffering.
Right.
A few weeks back, we had like two prominent people who committed suicide. Mm-hmm. Right. And mm-hmm. one Bourdain, I'm not sure, and another one was.
A young fashion designer.
That's right, yeah.
Can't remember her name.
And so one of the guys in my class at Nash, he said, you know, he listened to the interview and I think it's the mother of Bourdain or loved one, or someone said, he had everything. I don't know why he committed suicide. And then the guy said, but obviously he didn't have everything, you know. And so I was thinking about that yesterday, and I was thinking, like, this is why it's so important to get at pervasive suffering, because this is the one. Sure. When we think we have everything, right?
Right.
I mean, we got money, we got nice things, we got the wonderful person by our side, whatever. We think we have everything, but in reality we're still suffering because of this pervasive suffering, because of this dukkha, not being satisfied. And I thought that was like, for this guy to actually be aware of this,
right.
I'm doing something right in the class. You know? And I think it's something that we really should all be aware of. That's the one we really got to get to.
Yeah.
That's the one that escapes us. We just don't get that one at all. We don't think, we're not aware of that.
I hadn't heard that interview. Thanks for sharing that. Because I actually, of course, anytime you hear of somebody who's that successful in worldly terms, taking their own lives, it always just point out that fact that all of that stuff can't possibly be satisfying, because otherwise people wouldn't take their lives. They would be quite content and happy. You know, we know kind of this, what's interesting is we all sort of know these things at some deep level, but we don't always abide in a way that is in accord with that. We aren't concordant in our thoughts and actions on the basis of that. We still keep going after a lot of these external things, thinking that somehow that will satisfy. John Landau, who was here not that long ago, I think, teaching, wasn't he? Yeah. He uses the term, it's the if-only mentality. If only I had this, then I'll be happy. And if only I'll have that. And you get to a place where there's no if-onlys that exist out in the world that you can get that will satisfy that need. And especially because you recognize at some point that all the things that you said if-only about didn't get you there. You know, your if-only always gets trumped by another if-only, you know. And this is not possible for us to attain that state of kind of true peace and happiness. There's always something missing, you know. There's always something that isn't there. Yeah. And so what we're doing in our Buddhist path, of course, is to let go of that desire to have everything change on the outside. And it's not that we don't pay any attention to the outside. That would be a mistake as well, because the outside is important to attend to. Otherwise we'd just be kind of isolated from the world, and we can't do that because we're living in an interdependent world. We have to pay attention to what's going on in our countries, in the world, and so on. But we can't put all of our onus on that and say that if we get all of that in place, then we're going to be fine. You know, once I have the perfect partner and the perfect job with the perfect house and the perfect kids and the perfect this and the perfect that, then it's all going to be fine. I mean, even if you happen to get something that resembles that, it changes, right? You know, suddenly the kids aren't so, you know, cool as what they used to be. They become teenagers, you know, whatever. And suddenly the partner isn't quite as, you know, appealing as what they were. And then suddenly the house, you know, has got all kinds of problems. And then suddenly your job is real miserable. And, you know, so there's no fixing it on the outside. But if we fix it on the inside, and this is why we suffer, exactly, because we put too much attention on all of that, and there's an expectation that somehow that's going to relieve our suffering. And it is suffering, the Buddha says. It's actually part of this conditioned state that we're in. So, I mean, it's real. As I said, I mean, the more I teach it, the more I realize kind of how common sense it is. But do we live our lives that way? No, we keep buying back into it. You know, we keep going back to it and thinking somehow that's going to satisfy. Now, again, it doesn't mean that we don't have those things in our lives. Every one of us has creature comforts and things that, you know, make our lives quite nice in many ways. But we have to have the recognition that while we're enjoying them, that they aren't the ultimate satisfaction for us. We don't put all of our faith and confidence in those. We recognize that there are more lasting internal qualities that will help us when the good things are there and when the good things aren't there. That will help us ride kind of the waves of life and be able to have a more stable mind within all of that. And then eventually attain the stability that comes with deeper peace, with nirvana, with liberation, with enlightenment. So, thanks for bringing that up. That's an interesting quote. I guess I hadn't heard that one. So one other thing, yes, there's a question back here. Someone have a microphone? Yeah. What's your name, by the way?
Blaine.
Hi, Blaine.
I don't know if it's on. Okay. I think one of the first kinds of suffering you talked about was physical, like
right.
Pain, sickness. and something I've been dealing with for a while.
Uh-huh.
And that's the hardest thing to get past.
Sure.
You have a physical ailment that you deal with every day.
Right.
And I've really struggled with it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered if you had any thoughts.
Yeah, I'm sorry that you're having that experience. It's like a chronic situation that you're dealing with. Yeah, I mean, I guess, again, because there's no relief that you're experiencing necessarily, or maybe just temporal relief, it's not something that you can be rid of, that there can be maybe the thought that thinks, well, then this can never end, but to have some conviction that things do end, but perhaps not in the way that we can experience in the moment, that we can still have some faith in practicing these teachings that lead to a more ultimate end to our suffering. And try to use suffering. I know this is maybe a bit of a leap from the focus that we might initially have on ourselves, because it is important, as I said, to have self-compassion, to really genuinely want yourself to be free from all the suffering you experience, not just these subtler forms, but certainly the grosser forms that you experience, that you are experiencing. It's also important to use that as a doorway to open to the suffering of others, if we can. That's kind of the Mahayana level of it, even the sort of thought transformation, mind training, Lojong. We're going to talk about this a little bit tomorrow night in the Discovering Buddhism class. But to be able to use what you're experiencing in your own suffering as a doorway to identify with the suffering of others and to want them to be free from suffering. Lama Zopa Rinpoche recommends this thought that is really a very powerful one. It's a form of Tonglen, and I haven't talked so much about Tonglen over the weekend yet. I'm going to talk a little bit more this afternoon. Tonglen have you not heard of Tonglen? Maybe I better talk about it just in case there are people who haven't. Tonglen are these two Tibetan words. Tong means to give and Len means to take. But you practice it in an opposite way of sort of taking away the suffering of others and giving them your happiness. Now, that's a pretty challenging thing when you're already in a lot of pain and difficulty to think, oh, I'm going to take all the pain of everyone else who has a similar situation or who's dealing with chronic pain, and I'm going to take that into my own being, willing to take that on so that I can become an agent to help others to be free from that. What Lama Zopa recommends is that you even have the thought, through your own having to deal with your pain, may others not have to have pain. That's already a really powerful thought, because it says, okay, I've got a plate of pain here in front of me. I'm not going to take additional scoops of pain from everyone else necessarily. I'm not quite there yet. But I'm going to at least say, well, by my having to endure that pain, may others not have to be in pain. And it can be really transformative. It can help to give our pain a purpose, because the purpose is to help us to open up to that compassionate wish that others not suffer, just in the same way that we initially generate the thought that we not suffer. So I don't have, you know, a wide range of things to say in regard to dealing with chronic pain, but the most important thing with anything in our lives is that we make it grist for the mill. We make it something that helps us to transform spiritually as much as we can. And I know with pain, it's very difficult when that's happening to do that. But if you can introduce some of these thoughts, some ideas around, by my having to endure this through my day, through my minutes of the day, seconds of the day, every one of them, may they become a cause for others to not have to experience that. Because you know what it's like to experience it. Would you wish that upon anyone?
No.
You know, so you know that it would be wonderful if you could just hold that wish. And it doesn't mean that through doing that it actually will happen, that no one else in the world is going to suffer because Blaine's suffering. It means rather that you're going to be more capable in your heart to have compassion for others and their suffering.
Yeah,
if that makes some sense.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, now I know, I think before, since I've experienced it, I know before I was probably judgmental of people because, you know, people are, you can't see pain, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to explain it in words even sometimes.
Exactly.
Now, when I know people that are experiencing pain, I just accept it that that's how they are and don't judge them at all, because you can't.
Right. Absolutely. And that's a good lesson already, to have acknowledged from what you've been going through. You know, and certainly mental pain is the same. People are dealing with various levels of what we call mental illness. We all have mental illness according to the Buddha, you know, which degrees. But those who are diagnosed with, you know, mental illness, we frequently don't know who those folks are either, you know, that are dealing with mental pain. And so we might have some bias of diminishing what others are experiencing because we don't know it ourselves. Once you know it, then you have an ability to more clearly identify with it, and then your heart can open with greater compassion for those who are in a similar situation. And we find this frequently, right? You know, cancer survivors are really good support people for people with cancer because they know what the person with cancer is going through, right? Grief, people who've dealt with grief previously, who've gone through the process of working with their own grieving, are very good support people for people who are newly grieving. So we see that our pain actually is an incredible gift, something that opens us up to the reality of the suffering of others and makes us quite capable of identifying with others at that level and thereby being a greater support to them. And the support might simply be by generating compassion on our own cushion, but we might even be compelled at some point to get more involved in others who are experiencing chronic pain. I don't know. Does that help a little bit?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Blaine. Yeah, Anna.
It might also help if you look at pain, which I kind of try to do, always trying, as a purification of our negative karma,
mm-hmm.
and tell yourself, this too shall pass, and hopefully and most likely, because we're diminishing our negativities by suffering, it will lead me to a higher place spiritually, so that should give you some kind of joy.
Yeah. And again, that's a wonderful thought, Anna. I think also we have to each check in and see what our own conviction is and around karma and our own understanding to make sure that it's not distorted and kind of some people when they hear about karma think, oh my gosh, you know, I was a horrible person to have caused this to happen to me. But that's not the right answer when we think about karma. We're rather just acknowledging that there's causes and conditions behind it. And when those causes and conditions ripen, they ripen into a particular experience and we can learn from that experience. We can actually, you know, generate some positive qualities from that. So it's just important to have the
and
right
And that goes for all of us.
Yes, so. Absolutely.
And you mental know. Suffering could be even more
absolutely.
Painful than any physical yeah. suffering.
Yeah. It's very true. So these are great ideas. I think there's many different ways, you know, that we can work with it. But the most important thing is to be very kind to ourselves in the process of dealing with whatever we have in our lives. Because every one of us knows that our situation could change on a dime, right? You know, one day you're feeling perfectly well, the next day something's gone wrong physically, or there's an accident, or there's a loss in your life, or fill in the blank. You know, so we know that this is the nature of our existence. And it is karmically induced. We have to admit that is the whole process behind all of it. But once more, to have that joy that knows that it doesn't have to be this way. And if we attend to our minds and develop these qualities that we're working on this weekend, compassion, loving kindness, and so on, that we'll actually have the potential to change our situation and to help others to change theirs. So it's a very hopeful thing. That was one of the things I wanted to mention in regard to yesterday, too. I had a few answers for, I think it was Renee and then even Laura who was here who brought up this idea around the feeling of despair that sometimes comes when we open to the suffering of others, kind of feeling overwhelmed, feeling what, again, Kamala Sheila's term was horrified anxiety. You know, you start opening to the suffering of the world and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, this is too much. Well, one of the thoughts that kind of can bring you out of that is this understanding that we all do have the potential to experience something other than that. We all have what we call Buddha nature. We all have a fundamentally pure mind that is simply clouded by all these factors. And that's adventitious. It can be removed. So it's a bit of a joyful side of it that we need to always inject and say, in regard to Blaine's situation, for example, that it doesn't always have to be this way. There is the potential for the change to happen. It may not happen in the timing that we want it to, in the moment, but it's a process. And as long as we continue to attend to the process will have its results. We have to have that conviction in cause and effect, which is essentially what karma is. It's cause and effect on the level of the experiences of beings. Just like we have cause and effect in the world that we have great confidence in, right? And here we are in the summer months when everything grows in your garden, right? Many of you have a garden, I'm sure, right? You know that you don't sit there from your window and look out at your garden and go, where are all the vegetables, you know? And
Where are all the tomatoes? If you didn't do any of the work, you know that you have to go out there and you first have to get everything planted and make sure that the soil's all tilled, so all the nutrients in it, make sure that it gets watered, make sure that it's getting enough sun, make sure all these things are happening, and then you'll get a nice bounty, fruit and vegetables, whatever. So we know this in the physical world. We don't take for granted that things are going to come from nowhere. Instead, we put our effort into creating the causes and conditions. Well, if we have that level of conviction in the physical world, why do we lack it in regard to our experiences? Because we don't see the connection so directly. And this is what the Buddha is pointing out to us in the teachings on karma, is that there is a methodology for how we experience what we experience. So our goal in anything that's coming into our lives, be it chronic pain or be it, a loss in our lives or be it, somebody, the next door neighbor who's crazy and yelling at us, we have to go, what can I learn from that? As I said yesterday, Pema Chodron, I'm paraphrasing her, but she says, karma is life giving us the lessons we need to learn. So if it's in your life, it's in your life for a reason, because you created it and you go, okay, let's get curious about this. Let's look at how I could change that, how I could do something different that will stop that from happening. So this is a very important teaching, but as I said earlier, it's important to have the right framing of it to not... I hear too many Buddhists saying, it's their karma, like shrugging their shoulders, like, oh, poor them, but at the same time, look at the mess they created. Well, that's not really helpful. We need to be really sensitive to that reality that we're all in this process. We're all doing this. As Anna pointed out, we're all suffering. We're all under the control of these factors. And how sad it is that this is our situation. But it can be different. And that's the hopeful side of it. Just kind of leading us into this idea of joy, which is the fourth immeasurable. And joy is a real amazing antidote to any of the things that we experience on the path that can be a little challenging for us, that can be hard for us. It's to introduce this idea of taking joy and rejoicing in the good things that we do have, even the potential that every one of us possesses to be able to have it otherwise. So with each of these immeasurable thoughts, I don't think everyone in the room has necessarily all the handouts, and that's okay. You don't necessarily need all of those, but I'm going to read the little quote that's on the handout for the weekend course in regard to immeasurable joy. And this is from Kathleen McDonald's wonderful book, Awakening the Kind Heart, where she talks about the four immeasurables. She says, taking delight in the happiness, success, and good fortune of others is one of the ways that we practice third immeasurable thought. Now, again, she introduced them in the more traditional way that's in the Theravadan tradition of immeasurable love, compassion, joy, and then equanimity. As I said earlier, equanimity I'm placing first because this is the way that we tend to practice it in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. So in immeasurable joy, she says it's often called sympathetic joy, or sometimes I even hear the term empathetic joy. I don't know which one is better. I mean, they both have that feeling that you're with somebody in that joy. You're not alone in your joy. So sympathetic joy or empathetic joy, why? Because it is not a private joy, such as we might feel from winning a tennis game. Rather, it is a joy that is outer-directed and inclusive of others. Immeasurable joy is like a further extension of immeasurable loving kindness because it wishes everyone to experience happiness not only now but far into the future and is not just wishing that happiness but taking delight in that. Sometimes we use that term as a synonym for our joy. It's a real genuine delight. Of course, we need this on our spiritual path. As I said, looking at the suffering of the world can be a bit depressing, can be a bit challenging. We need to have the joy that also takes delight in all the good things that people do have, that beings have created, that we ourselves have created. Every one of you, every day, Rinpoche says, you should rejoice at having another day of this precious human life. You created this. Yes, your parents gave you the two cells that this body formed from, without a doubt. They were involved in that process. But you created this through the force of your karma. You would not have a human rebirth had you not created some amazing, amazing causes. You'd like to be congratulated. Come out of the womb, you should be congratulated. Congratulations, you created a human rebirth. Look at you. Even if you have like a day in this human rebirth, how amazing. We've all had many years in this human rebirth, and we hopefully will have many more. But it's really important to rejoice in that, to say, I have this incredible opportunity. I mean, if you just compare yourself to the animals, I know the Buddha speaks about a variety of realms of existence, some of which might be hard to believe in, but we share this world with animals, right? Just that mosquito I was mentioning earlier, you know, many mosquitoes out there in the woods, right? They don't have that opportunity that we possess. We had a mosquito in the room here. It might be getting some kind of imprints from me going blah, blah, blah about the Dharma, but, you know, is a mosquito going to sit down now and start meditating on immeasurable compassion? Probably not, you know. Might meditate on, you know, drawing blood from my arm or something. So we see the potential that we have in this human life, and we can be incredibly grateful for this and rejoice in this. Now, when it comes to others, that's where it becomes a little more challenging. And we see that if we talk about in this, every time I've presented every one of these four immeasurables, I've talked about what's the far enemy of them versus what's the near enemy of them, kind of what is close to getting to it but is not quite there because something's a little distorted. But let's talk about the far enemy first. When it comes to joy for ourselves and joy rejoicing in ourselves in our own situation, I would say the far enemy is something like despair or a sense of kind of not having the delight that we would normally want to have, having even maybe a bit of cynicism. Whereas when we talk about taking joy in others, the far enemy is jealousy, is envy. We don't like seeing others having good things in their lives sometimes, right? Has that ever happened to anyone in the room? You know? Yeah. Especially when we see people who we don't like having good things in their lives. This is what I mentioned yesterday, this term in German they call Schadenfreude, which is, you know, taking joy in the misery of others. Well, we really like it when those people don't get what they want, right? You know, that's where we take joy. Do we ever take joy when they do get what they want? I mean, even just look at what happens when you have two competing sports teams. You know, if the World Cup's still going on, right? There's still a few more matches. I mean, you don't ever see, like, both sides in terms of the fans rejoicing that one team has won, right? Yeah. It just doesn't happen. You know, they're rejoicing only if their team wins, and they're really angry and upset and sometimes even having some pretty major brawls on the basis of their team losing, right? So we see that we find it really hard to take joy in other people's good fortune, in other people having what they want and like in their life, whereas we take joy when they don't get it, when they are actually, you know, pretty miserable. So we see that this jealousy that refuses to take joy in the good fortune of others and instead wants that for ourselves. We wanted our team to win. We wanted us to get the promotion at work. We wanted us to be the ones who received that, you know, wonderful compliment or whatever. So whenever we have that mind of jealousy, we see it's kind of the opposite of joy, and we need to work on combating it. Of course, if we recognize that most of the things that jealousy is about aren't really that lasting in their pleasantness either. Once more, we go back to the suffering of these things. We recognize that all the things that we take, that we're jealous about, aren't going to provide us any real lasting satisfaction. So your team wins. You know, seriously. Who even remembers who won the last World Cup? I mean, I guess the people involved at that level maybe do, but, you know, who won the last World Series? Well, you know, who won the last Super Bowl? At some level, these wins don't really mean anything. Even what other people get, you know, in terms of they got it and you didn't, does it really mean that much? Is it really that important? And of course, again, when we look at it at a deeper level, we see that these things don't provide any real lasting satisfaction. So why are we so hard on, you know, the whole situation? Why is it so difficult for us to generate some joy? Because we tend to be more jealous. So taking joy in others' good fortune is a really important part of this practice. It's not the sum total of this practice of immeasurable joy, but it's kind of where it begins. Is being able to first rejoice in our own good fortune and then be able to rejoice in the good fortune of others, particularly with the thought of how wonderful it would be if they were able to attain these pretty transcendent states of not just their temporal well-being, but their more lasting, you know, well-being in liberation and enlightenment, where they no longer suffer, and kind of the joy that we want to anticipate that we'll have upon beings attaining that state. It's a very powerful force. This is why we talked about this briefly yesterday. Joy is incorporated into one of the paramitas, one of the perfections. We call it joyous effort or enthusiasm, you know, for our practice. It's so important to have a joyous mind. One teacher I had said, if you're practicing Buddhism and it's not fun and joyous, then you're doing it all wrong. You know, our spiritual path should be one that's filled with joy, filled with this every day. And moreover, it becomes a source of happiness for ourselves. You know, if we're dealing with difficulties in our life, you know, such as what you mentioned, Blaine, you know, very difficult times where we're going through day in and day out, a lot of things that can be quite challenging. We might find it hard to find sources of happiness in our lives. But if we take delight and joy in what others have, then we actually have a source of that all the time. Master Shantideva, who I've mentioned before, many of you know, this great Indian Buddhist saint and scholar, in the 8th century, he wrote the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. And in the 5th chapter, this is verse 77, he says, "The goal of every act is happiness itself, though even with great wealth it's rarely found. So take pleasure in the excellence of others. Let them be a heartfelt joy to you." So it's kind of like, you know, we are at a bit of a scarcity of things to maybe be joyful about in our own lives. That may be our situation. But if we take joy in the excellence of others, in the good things that others possess, then there's never a shortage. There's never a drought of, you know, things that we can rejoice in and generate joy in our own hearts. And joy is the culmination of these kinds of, you know, warm thoughts that we've been cultivating all weekend. The thought of equanimity, the thought of loving kindness and compassion. It's really brought into this more joyous state, exuberance, delight that we can really depend upon when things are difficult. To recognize that this is a potential that we all have to experience all the time. So I'm just going to say a few more words. We're getting close to noon, so I won't be able to do the meditation on rejoicing and developing a measurable joy, but we'll do that this afternoon. Any of you certainly welcome to come back for that at 2:00, and then we'll continue our course and go into a little bit more of how the four immeasurables help us to cultivate bodhicitta, how they're really operative as major forces in that mind of bodhicitta that is a key part of our spiritual path. So, with a measurable joy, as I mentioned, we're trying to take delight, and this was even in the verse, right? If you go back to that verse, it's on page 177. Again, this was part of what you recited, the shorter version that was earlier. It's expanded upon again in the fourth verse on page 177, where it has this idea of all sentient beings being never separated from the happiness of higher rebirth and liberation. So this is even the wording that was used in the single line version that you recited earlier today. So we are talking about, to some degree, them having temporal happiness. Why? Because we do recognize that you do have to have a higher rebirth with some good things in place in order to use your life purposefully. As I said, as a mosquito, as an ant, as a dog, as an elephant, whatever, as a hell being, a hungry ghost, all these various states that the Buddha said, even sometimes as a god, as one of these beings that's born with incredible luxury and what have you, you don't have the capacity to use that life well. You don't have the capacity to make progress on your spiritual path. So our first sort of taking delight in others is taking in delight in wanting them to have that good rebirth, that higher rebirth, and specifically a human rebirth, one where you do have the potential to use this life well. It's kind of interesting to say another aspect about the human life that's not just the fact that we all, well, most of us, again, we can have mental impairment where we can't use this life as fully because of that factor. But we all have, just besides this human intellect and this, you know, human being able to process and work with things, discriminate things in a very fine way. Moreover, we have a life where we have a bit of a balance of suffering and happiness. And here I'm using suffering as the more painful stuff and happiness referring to kind of the pleasurable things. Because we have a bit of a measured life that's not completely overwhelmed by suffering for most of us and not completely intoxicated by happiness, we kind of get an idea that there's some choice there. There's something that we can be directed towards to be free from our suffering and to know that there is some happiness that is attainable. So this is a very powerful thing, you know, to have attained and to be able to use. And our taking joy and delight and the thought of others having that is already pretty amazing. Now, again, will all beings ever all have a state of, you know, a human rebirth? Well, God, how many beings would be on the planet then? You know, and there's many other realms, the Buddha says, of human existence. It's not that they all just abide here on this planet, but it's hard to imagine that all beings would have that simultaneously. But nonetheless, we can have that thought of how wonderful it would be if they were to have kind of that good rebirth and not be separated from that, continue to have good rebirth after good rebirth, to continue to experience, you know, the things that are good within samsara. But that, we of course know, isn't the final thing. That's why the second thought is there. May they also never be separated from liberation and enlightenment. May they, you know that true joy and freedom that comes from that result. And then we experience the joy that is sharing that with them, that is kind of together with them, not only having a good rebirth, but also having these deeper states of well-being that come from doing the deeper work, from attaining the third noble truth, the end of their suffering, from going on to even attaining Buddhahood. So these are the sorts of thoughts that we're generating when we cultivate a measurable joy, is we're thinking about that for ourselves and generating some rejoicing in our own good fortune at having this human life and our own desire to attain liberation and generating joy on the basis of that. But moreover, we're generating this empathetic joy. I can really feel joy with others in a state that is good for them, a temporal state of a good rebirth, and a more ultimate state of liberation and enlightenment. So this is kind of the conclusion of these four measurables in terms of that, but as I said, joy can be cultivated in regard to every one of these thoughts. It's something that is really an important component of our spiritual practice. Because this is not an easy path. I don't know how many times I've said that this weekend. Maybe I'm saying it too much. It's not good advertising, right? We all like the easy path, you know. There's what Staples has, that easy button. I mean, if we had an easy button for our spiritual path, the easy button. I remember His Holiness the Dalai Lama, just as an aside, this is a story that goes back to 1997, I think it was. Yeah, 97, I was down in L.A. for teachings that were done at the arena there at UCLA with His Holiness on Precious Garland. I don't know if anyone in the room at those teachings. Yeah, Ravi was there. Yeah, they were pretty amazing teachings. I don't know if you recall that, Ravi, with the one point, I assure you do, when His Holiness was asked a question by the audience of, what's the easiest, quickest way to become enlightened? And His Holiness started to answer, and then all of a sudden, he just stopped and he started weeping, and he just put his head down, and you could hear a pin drop in this arena. I mean, seriously, it was that quiet. And then suddenly His Holiness came up and he started talking to Thupten Jinpa, you know, explaining what he was thinking about. And he was essentially sharing the story of Milarepa. And in the last days of Milarepa, he had invited some of his key disciples to come to, you know, receive a teaching. And of course they were all excited, you know, because the next morning they were going to receive this amazing teaching from Milarepa, one of his last teachings. They were going to get some, you know, new secret information or something that would, you know, I guess again, His Holiness wasn't saying it in this way, but the idea is that they thought they were going to get something quite extraordinary and special. And they did, but not what they expected. Milarepa simply took up his back robes and showed them his calloused behind, how much he had to sit in order to accomplish what he did. You know, that this was not an easy job, you know. And His Holiness was just weeping out of just that thought of, you know, here we are asking these questions from our, you know, have it this minute kind of Western mentality. I want it now. I want it yesterday, you know. We need to have that kind of perseverance. And it's a joyous perseverance. It's one where we recognize that it is possible to attain this, but it does take hard work. It does take a lot of sitting. It does take a lot of meditating. It does take a lot of study. And we just have to do what we can every day. Don't beat ourselves up because we aren't there yet. Recognize that we all have the potential to continue on that path, whatever our situation is. So I don't know, maybe that's a nice way to end as well, just to recall His Holiness's thoughts that he really felt it was important. He kind of shaked his finger and said, don't think easiest, don't think quickest, think long term. You know, so. Any final questions or comments from anyone? Yeah, Anna.
Just to put a little joy and hope into all this, Lama Yeshe, I watched the old, I wish I had known him, but I did not, his videos, he would say, dear, that's good enough. That's good enough. Don't press yourself. So
that's it too.
That's good enough. Wherever we are.
It's like in Babe when he says, that'll do, pig. And, I think that way to myself sometimes. That'll do, pig. I'm not trying to put myself down, but pigs are actually very intelligent creatures. All right. Any other comments from anyone? These have been great. Thank you all for what you have shared. And let's do a few closing prayers then. Do you have a regular routine you do on Sunday? Yeah. So Donna will lead us in those.
So if we'll turn to page 246, 246 in the prayer book, and we'll say Master Shantideva's dedication prayer. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth. Those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be free from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world.
Any other prayers or no? Well, let's just have a few additional thoughts then, and to dedicate also all the merit we've accumulated, all the positive potential that we've developed through being here today, to the good health and long lives of our spiritual guides, particularly His Holiness the Dalai Lama, whose birthday we just celebrated. He turned 83. May he have many, many, many more healthy years to guide us and others in this world. Also for Kyabji Zopa Rinpoche, Lama Zopa, our spiritual director of the FPMT, for all the other spiritual teachers we have a connection with, especially Geshe Gelug and Geshe Sangpo here at Kadampa Center, all the other teachers, not just in our tradition, but in other traditions that are helping beings to practice the kind heart, helping beings to know the joy of being compassionate and loving and kind in this world. May they all have good health and long lives, and may we and others never be parted from perfect guides in all of our lifetimes. Then also just send out this positive energy, particularly to those whose situation moves you at this time. Each of us has individuals in our lives who are perhaps experiencing obstacles to their well-being, who are suffering in other ways, dealing with illness, maybe even who are dying or who have died. Send this positive energy out, kind of gladly give it away so that these beings can be liberated from their suffering and can know true peace and happiness. And may all beings find true peace and happiness through our efforts here today. Thank you all. Enjoyed this very much. And I think we have a little photograph that we're going to try to do here.
Yes, we're going to take a group photo. So if you'd like to be part of that, we'll just take a couple minutes to do it. Come on up and we'll gather around Don for a photo.